Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham. And on this edition, we are diving back into the world of books, which we do from time to time. And this time, it's going to be really fun because we have three guests with us because we're looking at a brand new book, a collection of short stories called Every Day a Little Death, a crime fiction inspired by the songs of Stephen Sondheim. And I have the editor of the book, Josh Pachter, with me. Hi, Josh.
Hi.
Josh also wrote one of the stories in the book, and we are going to be joined also by two of the authors who contributed stories to the book. We have Rebecca K. Jones. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi there.
And John M. Floyd. Hi, John.
Hey.
And so I'm going to start with Josh, since Josh kind of launched this project, so to speak. And let's talk about how the book came about, because I know you've done other short story collections. You've put together other short story collections, but this one's certainly unique, and it's certainly, I am the absolute prime target audience for this book, because I have a vast musical theater background, having been in musical theater for a long time. But I'm also an absolute diehard mystery fan, a crazy mystery fan. I read mysteries all the time. I watch mysteries. I was thrilled that I got the brand new Anthony Horowitz book on Tuesday. I saw Rebecca's eyes light up. I got the brand new book on Tuesday on its publication date. So I'm a diehard mystery fan. And this is, of course, the perfect melding of the two, because it's taking Stephen Sondheim's works and using them as inspiration for crime fiction. So, Josh, talk about the beginnings of this book and how it all came together.
Well, I have been writing short crime fiction since the late 1960s, and I started editing books of short crime fiction in the early 1980s. I've edited about two dozen collections of short crime stories. The Everyday Little Death anthology is the eighth inspired by anthology that I've done. I started doing them in 2020. The first of these that I did was a book called The Beat of Black Wings, crime fiction inspired by the songs of Joni Mitchell. Mm-hmm. And that was originally intended to be a one-off. It was an idea that I had. I put it together, not thinking I would do any more inspired by books, but it actually was pretty successful. It won some awards, was nominated for some other awards, sold fairly well. And I was asked to do another one and then another one. And so I did crime fiction inspired by the songs of Jimmy Buffett and then Billy Joel and Paul Simon, the Beatles, the Grateful Dead. Some along the way, I did crime fiction inspired by the films of the Marx Brothers. And then about a year and a half ago, I decided to try something as different as the Marx Brothers book was. And because I've for a long time been a fan of Broadway musicals, I thought, well, let me do a Broadway book. Mm-hmm. And so I had to pick a composer or a pair of composers to focus on. And the one that immediately spoke to me was Stephen Sondheim, because while I like a lot of other people who have been responsible for Broadway shows, the one whose lyrics I think have always been the most well-suited for crime fiction has always been Sondheim. And of course, Sondheim not only has written the lyrics and the music for Broadway shows, but he's also done some writing that was very specifically non-musical and crime fiction oriented. For example, together with Anthony Perkins, he wrote the script for the early 1970s film The Last of Sheila, which is just a classic whodunit, which in fact won the Mr. Writers of America's Edgar Allan Poe Award for Best Mystery Film of the Year in 1973. And a side note, one of the reasons that I'm particularly interested in Sondheim is that in 1974, I was one of the five members of the Mr. Writers of America committee that was charged with selecting the winner of the Edgar Award for Best Crime Film. And actually, the committee members met to select the winner, but I wasn't able to attend that meeting. There were five members of the committee, and they deadlocked 2-2, so they called me to break the tie. It was a tie between Sondheim and Perkins, The Last of Sheila, and then the film Serpico.
Mm-hmm.
And I voted for The Last of Sheila. And so in a sense, I was the person who was responsible for Sondheim getting his Edgar Award, Sondheim and Perkins. So I decided that my eighth inspired by anthology would be crime fiction inspired by the songs of Stephen Sondheim. And off we went. And here we are, so
yeah.
to speak.
And so how did you, I mean, the book is, how did you decide, because the book has got writers from the world of crime fiction writers, but you also reached out to people who are from the world of musical theater, who don't necessarily write for write in the realm or the genre of crime fiction. So how was that decision made, and how did you decide who to approach exactly?
When I do these books, I have a couple of different parameters that I look at when it comes to picking writers. One of the things I'm always interested in doing is picking people who have some kind of a geographic connection with the songwriter whose works inspired the stories that will be in the book. So, for example, when I did the Grateful Dead book, I was particularly interested in writers who came from the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. When I did the Beatles book, I was particularly interested in British writers. For the Billy Joel book and the Paul Simon book, and again, the Sondheim book, I was particularly interested in New York-based writers. So that was one thing that was important to me. But then another criterion that I always use is I'm always looking to bring people who are not well-established crime fiction writers into the fold. And so in the previous books, what that has meant is it's meant people who either were at the beginning of their crime fiction writing journey, or people who hadn't previously written crime fiction at all, but maybe had some kind of a connection to the world. So that might mean, for example, reviewers, or it might mean bloggers. And I would reach out and see if I could convince people of that nature to try their hand at writing crime fiction. For this book, though, it seemed logical to reach out to people who were involved in the world of the theater. And in some cases, what I did was I went to people who had a foot in both camps, people who were both involved in the theatrical world and involved in the world of crime fiction. People like, for example, Joseph Goodrich, who has been writing both short crime fiction and crime fiction novels for some years, but who also writes plays. Mm-hmm. But then I also was looking for some people who maybe hadn't written fiction at all, or only a very small amount of fiction, but who were better known for, or who were known for their work in the world of the theater. People like David Spencer, who writes about theater. Michael Portantier, who writes about theater, but who hadn't previously written fiction at all. David Spencer had written one novelization some years ago, but otherwise no fiction. Michael had written no fiction at all. And so some of them were people who I knew about, but some of them were people who were recommended to me by others. And so I was able to rope in, I think about a third of the contributors are people who you wouldn't really think about if you were thinking about crime fiction writers, but maybe you would think about if you were thinking about people who were connected to the world of the theater.
Right. So in the book, for people who have not seen the book yet, the book is laid out chronologically in terms of when the shows were written, and it includes all of Sondheim's collaborations, as well as his TV musical Evening Primrose. And when you get to each section, it lays out all the musical numbers and then highlights which particular song is going to be the inspiration for the story that's going to follow. So when you laid it out, was it your job to then assign the specific show to each individual author? Did you let the authors pick the shows, or did you, how did this work in terms of assigning authors specific shows, or did you assign specific songs? I mean, how did this work?
Well, there were 20 shows.
Right.
And the way it worked was that I took the first pick. Mm-hmm. And I picked A Little Night Music. And the reason that happened is that when I do these inspired by books, a book has to have a title. And what I'm always looking for is one particular song whose title would work as the title for the book.
Right.
So, for example, when I did the Jimmy Buffett book, it seemed pretty obvious that the title of that book would have to be The Great Filling Station Holdup.
Mm-hmm.
When I did the Beatles book, it seemed pretty obvious that the title of that book was going to have to be, what was the name of that book again?
Happiness.
Something about a gun. Thank you, John. Happiness is a Warm Gun, obviously. A crime fiction title. And so I went through a list of the Sondheim songs, and it seemed pretty obvious that the book had to be called Every Day a Little Death. And I almost always, the Beatles book was the exception, but I almost always will write the title story myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I was going to write Every Day a Little Death. That means that A Little Night Music was reserved for me. But then when I started inviting people to contribute to the book, I basically said, first come, first serve. So whoever the first person was to say, yes, count me in, that person got to pick a show.
Rebecca raised her hand. So Rebecca got...
And Rebecca's raising her hand because Rebecca was in the original group of people that I reached out to and invited to contribute to the book. And that was because I happened to know Rebecca pretty well. Some of the people who contributed to the book are people who I didn't know before this book started turning around in my head. Some of the people like John are people I've known for, I've probably known John for, I don't know, 8 or 10 years. Some of them are people I've known longer. Brian Cox, for example, I've known Brian for about 40 years, ever since he was the managing editor of Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine. Jeffrey Sweet, who I've known for 50 years, ever since he and I were both teenagers, writing for Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually known Rebecca since 9 months before she was born.
Right. Well, that solves a mystery that I was going to present to our listeners, which was Rebecca has a tie to you in the sense that she is your daughter.
She is my daughter.
Mm-hmm. I am.
And she's also a successful published novelist. She's got three terrific novels to her credit and a number of short stories. And she's also successfully translated some crime fiction from French into English. So because I know that she's not only a published crime writer, but she's also a lover of musical theater, she was one mm-hmm. of the first people I reached out to. And I think she probably agreed to write a story within about 3 minutes of my reaching out to her.
So Rebecca,
so she got the next pick. Go ahead.
Right. So I'm going to ask Rebecca to jump in at this point then, because it's a perfect segue. So, and just also, not only is Rebecca a wonderful published novelist, her especially she's got a series of novels featuring Mackenzie Wilson for people who are interested. So you should check out Rebecca's books. But she's also a criminal appeals attorney in Phoenix by day. So she's got multiple careers. So Rebecca, when your father reached out to you and said, I'm writing this book of short stories based on Sondheim songs, what did you, and he obviously had already taken Little Night Music. So you had 19 shows to pick from. What, cause you ended up taking Into the Woods. And
yeah.
So what drew you? And did you, at that point, I'm kind of curious, did you have your choice of which song you wanted to do? How did this work?
So I think we were actually in a lazy river in Mexico when we first started talking about it. And the original idea was that the title song would come from Assassins. But as soon as Josh floated the idea, I knew I wanted to do Into the Woods. As a kid, that was the first musical that I knew like all the words to, and I listened to that CD just so many times. So I knew that that was the show I wanted to do. And then in thinking about what song could work as a background for crime fiction, I wound up picking Hello Little Girl because it's pretty menacing. I think there's room there for, mm-hmm. for crime.
Right, because it's the song that the wolf sings to Red Riding Hood. As he's trying to seduce her, to eat her. And one of the things, so how did you decide? Because I don't want to give away, we don't want to give too much away with in terms of what happens in your story. But one of the things I found really interesting was every author of these stories had kind of a different approach in terms of how they took the songs and converted them into crime fiction, because some of them really followed the outline of the specific song they chose. Some of them really focused on bringing in some of the lyrics, the characters' names from the show. Sometimes they had, some of them included almost the entire plot of the entire musical within the story, not just from the song. I mean, it was sort of like the entire encapsulation of the show itself was in the entire story, just from the one song. So what was your approach in terms of this one?
I had been to a conference not terribly long before Josh floated the idea, and done a writing exercise at the conference where we wrote second person future tense just for a paragraph. And I found it really kind of a fascinating exercise. And so when Josh said, you know, this is the idea, I said, sure. But I want to do it this way. And he said, you can try. and so I had to find a plot that kind of I thought would work for that form.
Mm-hmm.
And in looking at the song and in reading about Sondheim, and a lot of the names are in my story are Easter eggs. It, you know, a nod to Sondheim's Lithuanian heritage. And so just kind of thinking through what would be a good way to incorporate the spirit of that song into this form that I wanted to try.
Right. And I'm glad you actually brought the form up, because I was going to ask you about that, because it's strikingly different when you get to your story. And it took me a moment as I was reading it, I had to stop for a second and go, this is the way this is structured and being told is very different. But once you actually take a second and get used to the style of the writing, it's really good. It really, really works.
I had fun writing it, and then wasn't sure if it really worked, and sent it to Josh and said, here you go. What do you think? Does it work? And he wrote back and said, yeah, it really does. And
yeah.
Really, there weren't very many changes, I don't think, that he made.
I have to say, I was skeptical when Becca told me originally that she wanted to use this second person future tense voice for writing the story, because second person is very hard to pull off, and future tense is very hard to pull off successfully. And to combine the two of them, I thought, well, let's. I would say this to any author, not just my daughter. Mm-hmm. I would say, if you want to try it, go ahead and try it. But I'm not sure you're going to be able to make it work. And when she sent it to me and I read it, I thought, wow, it does. It works. Right. And I think anybody who reads the story, whether it was written by your daughter or not, you're going to read it and think, yeah, this has been successfully made to work.
Well, I think part of the reason I don't know if this was your intent, but part of the reason I think it works is because Into the Woods is taken, you know, is based on fairy tales. And a lot of times when fairy tales are written and then read by an adult reading it to a child, oftentimes it's presented in that way almost, in the sense mm-hmm. that an adult is reading the story to a child, and it does sometimes contain the same similar style of how the story is being presented. Do you know what I mean? So it almost felt like that as I was reading it. It almost felt like I was reading it aloud to a child, like a fairy tale. Does that make sense?
Well, and I think in Into the Woods, you know, you have that narrator character.
Yeah.
And so I thought a lot about the narrator character as being the person
right.
telling the story.
Yeah. And that's exactly, and that's kind of how it comes across. And that's why I think it really works, especially with Into the Woods, because with the whole basis of Into the Woods is fairy tales. And it does feel like a fairy tale. You're telling a fairy tale, or a fairy tale with, as is typical with Grimm's fairy tales, they have a moral to it. And some message you're trying to get across, which is, don't screw around with Red Riding Hood or Grandma, ultimately. Yeah.
Good day, young lady.
Good day, Mr. Wolf.
Look at that flesh, pink and plump. Hello, little girl. Tender and fresh, not one lump. Hello, little girl. This one's especially lush. Delicious. Hello, little girl, what's your rush? You're missing all the flowers. The sun won't set for hours. Take your time.
Mother said straight ahead, not to delay or be misled.
But slow, little girl, hark and hush. The birds are singing sweetly. You'll miss the birds completely. You're traveling so fleetly. Grandmother first, then Miss Plump. What a delectable couple. Utter perfection, one brittle, one supple. And
Mother said, come what may, follow the path and never stray.
Just so, little girl, any path, so many worth exploring. Just one would be so boring. And look what you're ignoring. Think of those crisp, aging bones. Then something fresh on the palate. Think of that scrumptious carnality twice in one day. There's no possible way to describe what you feel when you're talking to your meal.
Mother said not to stray. Still, I suppose a small delay. Granny might like a fresh bouquet. Goodbye, Mr. Wolf.
Goodbye, little girl. And hello.
Josh, when you were pulling these writers in, especially when you approached some of the theater writers like you mentioned, what were the responses you got, especially from the ones who had never written crime fiction?
Most of the people I approached were curious. And the reaction that I got was, well, this is an intriguing suggestion. Mm-hmm. And I think that if I had structured the book around anyone other than Sondheim, the response wouldn't have been as enthusiastic as it was. But people were intrigued by the idea of, first of all, trying to write a crime story at all, but second of all, trying to write one inspired by Sondheim. And I didn't get many people who said to me, no, this is just not a thing I want to try. Mm-hmm. Where it became challenging, though, was once the stories were written, because I will say, and I won't mention any names here, but I will say that not all of them were successful. And when I do these anthologies, I do them by invitation only. I don't edit what are called open call anthologies, largely because I don't have the time for an open call anthology. When you do that, you say to the world at large, anybody who wants to write a story, write one and send it in. Right. And then you might get 100 or 200 or 300 submissions, and those all have to be read. And frankly, I haven't got the time. So what I'll do is I'll reach out to, if I know the book is going to contain 18 or 20 stories, I'll reach out to 18 or 20 writers. And mostly that'll be writers who I know I can count on to give me high quality work by the deadline. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned earlier that I'm always going to try to include a couple of people who haven't done this sort of thing before. So there's an element of risk there. But if I do that with two or three writers per book, it's not a very large element of risk. Mm-hmm. Here, because I wanted about a third to maybe even a little bit more than a third of the stories in the book to be written by people who hadn't done this sort of thing before, the element of risk was larger. And in fact, there were probably about half the people, maybe not quite half the people, who wrote stories for the book wound up turning into stories that that just didn't have the level of quality that I was looking for. And so this is where people like John Floyd come into the picture.
Mm-hmm. I was going to get to John next because I was going to ask you. On the opposite end of the spectrum, you then got someone like John, who has written more than 1,000 short stories, who is done everything in crime fiction. He's won awards. He's a Lifetime Achievement Award winner in crime fiction. I don't know. John, do you have a love for musical theater and Stephen Sondheim as well?
Oh, I love Stephen Sondheim. I wish I had been given Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, though, Josh. I really do. I love that show. Love that show.
Okay.
Well, and let me just put in that it's not just that John has written more than 1,000 short stories. Anybody with time on his hands can write more than 1,000 short stories. There's right. No trick to that. The trick is to spelling them.
Mm-hmm.
And John has sold more than 1,000 short stories. In fact, John, if I'm correct, it's more than 1,100 or 1,200 short stories.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot of stories.
Well, and you can tell because John, just for the listeners, John tackled a song from The Frogs. Certainly not the easiest choice. I don't know. Was it very slim pickings by the time he got to you, John? Was there a lot left?
Yeah, I think Josh told me he wanted to do it from The Frogs.
Yeah, well, let me explain what happened there.
Yeah.
One of the people who I had reached out to and who had not written short crime fiction before, had not written any fiction before, one of the theater people that I reached out to, wrote me a story that came in right at the deadline. In fact, I think it might have come in a week after the deadline. The person asked me for an extension. You know what? Now that I think about it, a week after the deadline, the person had not delivered a story at all. So we're past the deadline, and I'm short one story. And John happens to be one of what I call my back pocket writers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's about a half a dozen of these people. These are people who I know that if I'm desperate, I can contact John and four or five other people and say, look, I need such and such a story, and I need it the day before yesterday, and it needs to be so good that it needs little or no work. And John will go, aye, aye, Captain. And I will get a story the day before yesterday, and it'll be terrific. And so I said, John, I need a story inspired by a song from The Frogs, and I need it almost instantly. And by gosh, within 72 hours, John had delivered to me the story. I love to travel, and it was just marvelous. I think I might have turned a semicolon into a comma, and that was all the work it needed, and it was ready to go.
So, John, did you?
Josh knew I was retired and I have time on my hands, Donald. That was what the.
Well, did you pick the song, or did he tell you which song you were going to do?
I think I picked the song from the musical, and I liked some of the. I don't know. I tried to, as you said, work the lyrics into the.
Mm-hmm. You did, and you certainly did.
And Josh suggested a few more Easter eggs than I had put in already, but I think those are fun. I really like to do those. And I chose, since it was travel, I chose a couple of guys who decide to pull a heist, which is completely stupid. And they get a bunch of misfits together to do this job, and nothing goes right. And it was just an awful lot of fun to write. So I had a great time. It was an easy job, Josh, because it was fun to do.
Well, and it's, you know, after I read the story the first time, and I had not, you know, read up on The Frogs in a long time, I certainly was familiar with I Love to Travel, but after I read the story, and I loved the story, I mean, you can tell, I have to say, when you read I Love to Travel, the short story, you can tell that this is written by someone who is a master at writing short stories, because it is so rich in atmosphere, characterizations, the plot in such a short number of pages. The plot is so well developed. You can see, you can visualize everything. You, the characters are so perfectly defined, and the way it all plays out right to the very end, you don't, and the great part is you don't really always see everything that's coming in the plot. It kind of tricks you, in multiple points, which is great, which is really good. But I was like, I need to go back and pull out various synopses of The Frogs, because I know there's more Easter eggs in here than I'm catching. And sure enough, there were all sorts of Easter eggs from The Frogs buried in here, like character names and all sorts, not only just lyrics, but the characters were based on the same characters and with abbreviations. And if so, I commend you. Did you like do some research on the show to get pull this stuff together, or was this Josh
putting
stuff in?
No, a little bit. I did some research, but just enough to find that there was a trip involved. You know, there's a twist involved, and I tried to make it something that where I could have some plot reversals and have things change direction several times. Mainly because I just think that's fun. I think I never grew up. I really like to. In the old Alfred Hitchcock Presents anthology series, you know, on TV years ago. A lot of times they would have a surprise ending and even surprises right during the story. And I just love those things. And I try to do those in some of the things that I write. And
right.
This was a fun story to work with.
Walk, walk, trudge, trudge, slog, slog, travel, travel, march, march. Trudge, trudge, slog, slog, travel, travel, lumber, lumber, plod, plod, shuffle, shuffle, talk.
So tell me more about this writer.
Shaw, Bernard Shaw, hated the name George, born in Dublin in 1856. Dramatist, literary and music critic, socialist spokesman, showman, controversialist, and a leading figure in the 20th century theater.
Wait a minute, is this the guy who wrote My Fair Lady?
Well, it was based on a play of his, Pygmalion. Ah, a Greek myth.
Then he can't be all bad.
That's the spirit.
March, march, trudge, plod, tramp, slog, stumble, stumble, trek, trek, trudge, plod, tramp, slog, grumble, grumble, walk, walk, trudge, plod, tramp, slog, stretch.
I love to travel, don't you? I love a change of pace, I love a change of space, I love to see a place that's absolutely new.
Sweat.
I love to travel,
bump,
don't you?
Limp,
of course you do. It's true. I love a change of venue, a change of menu, the feeling when you meet with something strange.
Slog.
I love to travel.
Slog.
I love a challenge.
Slog.
I love puff, change.
Puff. Drip, drip, slip, trip, catch.
Are we there yet? Because my feet have definitely lost interest.
Stop complaining. Such is life. Each of us must play his own part. You, Xanthius, a slave. I, Dionysus, a god.
Half a god. Your mother was mortal.
It still counts.
If you're a god, why do you cringe when you hear thunder?
That's my father, Zeus, chief of the Olympian gods, the most powerful and important job there is. And, well, he and I, we have issues.
You also cry when you go to the theater.
Have you been to the theater lately?
Mud, dirt, thorns, vines, sand, rock, gravel, gravel.
I hate to travel. I hate to even leave the house. I hate the change of air. I hate the getting there. I hate to pack and all of that. I hate to change my habitat. I hate to not know where I'm going, then to not know where I'm at. I hate the...
You've got to learn to see the bigger picture.
Swamp, slush, rain, fog, gnats, wasp, snakes, mosquitoes. Swamp, slush, rain, fog, gnats, wasp, snakes, mosquitoes.
Who needs to travel? I say to leave the world alone, it may unravel. But it's the mess we've always known. All right, okay, it isn't perfect, still it's perfectly okay. And if it's gone, I gotta hell, then let it, why should I as well? Forget it. First I had the grip, then trouble with my hip. Now I have blisters on my lip, this trip is giving me the pip.
You can stop rhyming right there. Move!
March, march, trudge, trudge, slog, slog, travel, travel.
I love to travel.
I hate to travel.
You too.
I do.
Don't you just love surprise? You've got to love surprise. You've got to love it or I'll leave you to be nibbled by the flies.
I love to travel.
What joy!
Oh, boy.
If it's exotic, it's erotic, and that's all I have to say. I love to travel, don't you?
I do.
Okay!
I love to travel, it's true. I love a change of venue, a change of menu. The feeling when you meet with something strange. I love to travel, I love a challenge. I love change. March, trudge, trudge, slog, slog, travel, travel. March, march, trudge, trudge, slog, slog, travel, travel. March, march, sludge, sludge, bump, bump.
It came out really wonderfully. It really did. Because I know when I reached out to Josh to do the show, he said, well, pick your favorite stories from here, and let's see if we can get some of those authors. And yours was definitely on my list of the short list of the ones I really wanted to talk about, because I was just so fascinated by how one, it's such a difficult show to try and encapsulate, and certainly not a known score by a lot of people. So congratulations. It was terrific. And right. Same with Rebecca, because she really takes, you know, Hello Little Girl and turns it into a really wonderful modernized version of the show that really captures the character. And like I said, one of the things I really liked also about it is the form you use of telling the story. So,
yeah,
but
let me say, I'm not as experimental or as brave as Becca was. My story was third person, past tense, once upon a time format.
No, but the details, it works really well. And the details are so good. I mean, you can visualize every single thing in that story. Everything is so perfectly described, and the characters are so perfectly drawn. It's just great. So, Josh, you are not off the hook, because I want you to talk about your story and the approach you took, because Every Day a Little Death, obviously, is the title of the book. So you've got a little bit of weight on there because you've got the title story to handle. And you've also got a little Night Music, which is one of the more well-known Sondheim musicals. So people really know the show. And I really liked what you did, because your story is very short and very sweet and very subtle, and right kind of to the point where it so talk a little bit about it without giving too much away, and what your thoughts were when you were tackling this.
Well, let me start by saying just a bit about the length of it. I mentioned early on in this show that I've been writing short fiction for a long time. My first published short story came out in 1968. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing this for over half a century. And one thing I've noticed over the years that I've been doing it is that the length of my stories has gotten to be shorter over time. Originally, my story ran probably around 4,000 words a piece. But they have gotten down to a point where they're about 2,000 words a piece. And especially if I'm editing a book myself, I don't want to take up too much of the room myself. In fact, I've always felt a little guilty about putting one of my own stories in a book that I'm editing at all. So I really want to spend the least amount of time on my own writing and give most of the spotlight to other writers. But I do feel that in this series of inspired by books, I'm almost obliged to contribute the title story myself, especially since I started out that way. Now it's become kind of a thing. So my story, Every Day a Little Death, like the show, is set in Sweden, and it's set around the year 1900. Now, one of the things that I really like about Sondheim's work is that so much of what's going on, not in every song, but in many songs, so much of what's going on is happening in the subtext. Mm-hmm. And I decided that where normally in crime fiction, what's happening is really happening on the surface, at least in short crime fiction. You don't have a lot of words to work with anyway. So you want to make sure that the story that you're telling is really being visibly told. And I thought it might be interesting to try to write a story in which what's happening is happening beneath the surface rather than on the surface. And so if you read my story at a superficial level, you might wind up wondering what in the world it's doing in a book of crime stories. Because when you read it superficially, honestly, really nothing happens in this story. Two Swedish women who are best friends sit together and drink some tea and gossip.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look beneath the surface, there's more than that going on.
Right.
And I don't want to say much more about the plot of the story than that, because it would be to say too much.
Right. All I will say is the major piece of action is that someone trips on some carpeting on a rug. That's the major piece of action.
Fair enough.
Right.
Fair enough. That's about the only thing that actually happens visibly in the story is that somebody trips on the carpet.
Yeah.
Yes. But I'm happy with the way the story turned out. I like the way the story turned out. It was a departure for me to write something subtle rather than to write something overt and blatant. I like the characters. I in recent years, I've been writing a number of short story series about the same character over and over and over again. I don't think that I could do that with any of the characters in this story. There are only two characters in the story, and neither one of them, I think, is going to come back. But they were both fun to write, and I almost kind of wish I could revisit them. But that's, spoiler alert, not going to happen.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's going to happen either.
Every day a little death. In the parlor, in the bed. In the curtains, in the silver, in the buttons, in the bread. Every day a little sting, in the heart and in the head. Every move and every breath, and you hardly feel a thing, brings a perfect little death. He smiles sweetly, strokes my hair, says he misses me. I would murder him right there, but first I'd die. He talks softly of his wars and his horses and his whores. I think love's a dirty business.
So do I.
So do I. And I do. Men are stupid, men are vain. Love's disgusting, love's insane. A humiliating business.
Oh, how true.
Oh, well. Every day a little death.
Every day a little.
In the silver,
in the matters,
in the pauses,
in the gestures, in the sun.
Every day a little sting.
Every day a little death.
In the heart and in the head.
In the lips and in the love.
Every move and every breath. And you hardly feel a thing. Brings a perfect little death.
What were the biggest surprises or delights in terms of once you got all the stories back and had everything and was putting it together? Was it the fact that so many of the theater people took so well to the crime fiction, or was it that your crime writers who didn't necessarily have a lot of musical theater knowledge were able to really take the Sondheim stuff and really run with it?
I think probably the biggest delight for me in putting this volume together was how much fun everybody seemed to have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, writing, at least in my experience, and I go to a fair number of writers' conferences. Most of my closest friends are writers, so I talk a lot with writers. And writing is work. You know, it's hard work to do. There are people like John who make it look easy, but John, would it be fair even for you to say that no matter how much fun you're having doing it, it's work to do it?
I guess. I had a career. Remember, I had a 30-year career. That was work, John.
Well, for me at any rate, and Becca's over there nodding, writing is work. And, you know, as I've edited a couple of dozen books over several decades, what I often hear from the writers when they're done with their stories is, man, that was hard work. I'm glad I'm done with it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was getting again and again and again from the contributors to this book, both the professional crime writers and the theater people, is that was a lot of fun. And that was just delightful to hear, is that it wasn't just a chore for the contributors, but it was enjoyable. Right. And, you know, a week or so ago, we did an event at the Drama Bookshop in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I invited all 20 of the contributors, well, 19 plus me, to converge upon New York at this event. And honestly, I just figured that maybe we might get 4 or 5 or 6 of them to show up for this event. And in fact, half of us were there. 10 of the 20 of us came to New York for this event. Now, some of them live in New York, mm-hmm. but we had contributors coming from as far away as Michigan mm-hmm. to be in New York for this event. I was hoping I could get John Floyd out of his armchair in Mississippi and Becca Jones, all the way from Arizona. That didn't work out, unfortunately. But we had 10 out of 20 people showed up. And I know that the reason, I know because they told me, that the reason that they made that extra effort to come was because they just had so much fun working on the project that they really wanted to get together with the other contributors to celebrate the publication mm-hmm. of the book. So mm-hmm. that was just an utter delight to work on a project that basically everybody involved agreed was an awful lot of fun to be involved with.
Right, which leads me to a question I have for a last question for Rebecca and John, which is, I'm assuming both of you have now read the entire book. Is that correct?
I have not read the entire book.
Oh, okay. But Rebecca nodded that she has. So, John, have you read any of the other stories? Or just...
No.
Nope.
Okay. Other stories.
Well, then you can't answer this question. But Rebecca, maybe you may, John, you may be lucky that you dodged a bullet here. Rebecca, having now read the entire book, is there one particular story that you read other than your own and not your dad's that you said to yourself, I wish if I had had a second choice of show or song to do to write about, I wish I had picked that one. Is there another one that you, after reading everybody else's stories?
My second favorite Sondheim show is definitely A Little Night Music. And so, I like, parentage aside, I like Josh's writing style and I liked that story in particular. Mm-hmm. But if he had chosen Assassins as the title story and I could have had A Little Night Music,
mm-hmm.
I might have done that.
Yeah.
Okay. That was a very good answer.
I will tell you, Dom, that if I could have picked any show, if it wasn't for the fact that I wanted to do the title story myself, if I could have picked any show, I would, like John, have picked A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, because that's far and away my favorite Sondheim show.
Right. And would you have picked Everybody Ought to Have a Maid, or would you have picked a different song, do you think?
No, I would not have picked Everybody Ought to Have a Maid.
I know. I was a little surprised at that choice. I was like, wow, this is going to be interesting how they're going to work this one.
Yeah, that was Marcia Talley who picked that one. I think she did a nice job mm-hmm. with it. It's not the song that I would have picked. I'm not exactly sure which song I would have picked, but I'm pretty sure it wouldn't have been that one.
Right.
Maybe I would have picked Comedy Tonight.
Yeah. Right.
Because it would have been just such an incongruous task to try to figure mm-hmm. out a way to take that song and use it to inspire a crime story.
Right. Right. Interesting. And John,
John?
You had no choice because you had to get the frog. You wanted Forum though, right?
That's right. It was a side Forum. But I think, Comedy Tonight would be, that summarizes A Funny Thing Happened to the Forum for me. I love Comedy Tonight. I would have liked to have tried that. I might not have done well, but I would have liked to.
So, Josh, what is next? Can we see, are we going to potentially see another musical theater related version? Are we going to see Sondheim one? Or are we going to see maybe a Criminal Cole Porter collection? Or...
I know that they're all set in the world of
1930s or 1940s kind of classic cocktail parties and with Cole Porter musicals.
There is another anthology coming out. Another editor is doing it of crime fiction inspired by Broadway shows, Broadway tunes. And it's not a single composer. It's different composers. It's being edited by Dawn Barkley, who has done a number of anthologies. And I think that book is coming out either late this year or early next year. I have two more inspired by anthologies in the works. One of them is finished. It's being worked on now. When I say worked on, we're doing a cover design and then final edits. It's due out sometime in October. It's called Cry and Shame, crime fiction inspired by the songs of Lyle Lovett. And that one, it's a thinner book because Lovett has only released 12 studio albums. So there'll only be, actually, we're going to do a 13th story in the book because we're doing one story inspired by one of the songs of his that was on the soundtrack to the movie Dr. T and the Women. So that'll be out from Down and Out Books in October. And then because I recently retired from a full, not like John, I'm also retired from a full-time career. I was an educator for 50 years. And when I retired from teaching, I decided that maybe I'll try, now that I have some spare time, an open call anthology. So I'm working on one now that's open call, and it's going to be called Steal Away, crime fiction inspired by the captains of yacht rock.
I was going to say, because I was say, isn't that a song by Robbie Dupree? But you're not doing a Robbie Dupree. Wow. Not doing Robbie Dupree songs, because it's going to be it's three stories. But it's going to be a yacht rock. That's kind of it's a yacht fun.
Yeah, and I've already got. I think currently there are about 38 different authors who have told me that they are working on stories by different yacht rock artists. I actually have been in communication with Robbie Dupree. And he has expressed an interest in seeing the manuscript when it's finished, with an eye to maybe writing an introduction to the book.
Cool.
And even cooler is that I have a sort of a friend of a friend connection to Rupert Holmes.
I can also connect you to Rupert Holmes.
Well, please do, because you know, Rupert Holmes now,
he's like the master of mystery fiction. He's a great mystery person.
If I could get Rupert Holmes to write a story inspired by Escape, the Pina Colada song. That would be the pinnacle. Or Partners in Crime.
Pinnacle. Okay, I will reach out to my contact who knows Rupert.
That would be just the most awesome thing in the world.
Yes, we will talk offline, and I will see what I can do. Because Rupert is a terrific person,
Yeah, well, he's one of the people I haven't met, but everybody who I've talked to who knows him says exactly the same thing. Donald, he's a great guy, and I've read him, and he's a terrific writer.
He's a very good writer. He just wrote the new Pirates of Penzance.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
So he's a busy guy, but a short story he could probably do that. Yeah. Okay.
That would be wonderful. So those two are coming out, and
then Sondheim Volume 2. Then Sondheim Volume 2. Rebecca keeps laughing because she really wants another one. I think a Cole Porter one would be fun because it's like nice.
Cole Porter would be fun. You know, I mean, there Rodgers and Hammerstein. Rodgers and Hart.
Jason. Oh, so he wants Jason Robert Brown. Yeah.
You know, there's room for more. I'm thinking that these next two will make 10, and that's such a nice round number.
You know, I think maybe Rebecca needs to take over the family legacy of editing anthologies. There we go.
Unlike these two guys, I have a full time job.
That's true.
I got stuff to do.
I got it. Okay. So, Josh, where would you like the listeners to purchase the book? Where is the best place for them to go get this book?
I think probably the best place to get it would be bookshop.org.
Good.
Okay. Because bookshop.org supports local booksellers. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, the gigantic clicks and mortar booksellers are owned by people who have enough money.
Yes. Yes. So, I've had multiple authors say the same thing. They like bookshop.org. Yeah.
So, so if you want to, you know, if you want to order it online and have it come to your home without having to put a pair of shoes on and actually go out into the world, bookshop.org would be the place to go. But if you want to go out into the world, some bookstores have it on their shelves, and any bookstore that you can walk into can get it for you.
Yes, they can order it for you. And everyone has their own website. I know Rebecca does, and so does John. Rebecca, do you have any more books coming out? Do we have more Mackenzie Wilson books coming, or what's the story?
Did Josh put you up to asking that question?
No, I have it in my notes. I always like to ask the guests what's coming up for them.
Hope springs eternal.
Okay, good. But they can follow you on your website.
Yeah, and I'm on all the social media platforms.
Got it. Okay. And John, I know you're retired, but are you writing at all? Other than whenever Josh calls you at the last minute and says, do a short story for the frogs?
I've been waiting a lot for that. But yeah, I am writing. I am writing a lot. I've got a collection of stories coming out from Crippen Landrieu in October.
Oh.
Called River Road and Other Mysteries. It's going to be 17 detective stories. And a lot of this is thanks to Josh Pachter. Josh, thanks for putting me in touch with those folks there.
Terrific.
They're good people, and they will do you up proud, John.
They are.
That's great. Well, congratulations. That's wonderful. So I want to thank all three of you for participating in this. I love the book. I highly recommend it. I also want to tell people, not only is it a great collection to read if you love mysteries and if you love musical theater, but it's also a great gift to give to friends if they are Sondheim fanatics, like there are a lot of Sondheim fanatics, especially even if they're not crime fiction people. Because one of the things I always get, because I love mysteries and I try to recommend mysteries to people, and they're like, I don't like mystery stories. These are short stories. Doesn't take that long to read. You can pick it up and read a story and then put it down and then pick it up at your leisure and find another story to read. So you don't have to get yourself into a 300-page gigantic book, which Rebecca, I don't know if you've seen the new Anthony Horowitz, but it's 500 plus pages. I was like, jeez.
I'm very excited.
I know I am too. It's because it's the last of those particular series. And I got it and I flipped to the back page and went, oh my God, it's 525 pages. Jeez. Okay. Woo. Anyway, so thank you again for participating in this, and much continued success. And Josh, you and I will talk offline about the Rupert Holmes stuff, but take care,
Sounds
everybody.
Good.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Great to talk with you.
Thank you.